Welcome to Cowboy Shit, hosted by Ted Stoven and myself, Dustin Edwards. Join us as we chat with influential figures shaping the Western world, from artists to athletes. With backgrounds in bull riding, media, and sports commentary, we're not afraid to tackle tough topics while celebrating the essence of cowboy culture. Find our clothing line at cowboyshit.ca and tune in for insightful conversations. Thanks for listening.
Roll down this old dirt road. How far does it go? Should buy my 4x4. Smoke. I stepped out for a smoke. We've been at it all night long. At each other's throat.
Welcome to episode 166, Cowboy Shit. My name is Ted Stoven. My co-host, as always, Mr. Dustin Edwards. Thanks for joining me today, Dustin. Thanks for doing this.
Happy to be on.
Man, we were just talking, and I was talking about, you mentioned something about how we applied for like the Amazing Race Canada or something, and I don't really recall doing the interview at all, but I have a funny story for you. So I Paul Horton, who you met at DB Hockey on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
Those that don't know what DB Hockey is, send us a DM if you are wondering about DB. If you're in Calgary, you want to play some hockey. We got Wednesday nights, 6:45 p.m. in the wintertime. It's pretty
good.
What's
ideal. DB stand for, Ted? Tell the people.
You're going to have to ask us. You're going to have to slide in our DMs to figure out what DB hockey stands for. Ask Dustin or myself. We'll fill you in. But we are both DBs. Play hockey on Wednesday nights.
That's great.
Yeah, so I was introducing Eddie to some of my friends in Calgary. But anyways, Paul, who you met, he has a skate on Fridays, and he asked me if I wanted to play goalie one time, and I was like, no, I don't want to play net, because I kind of given up on it for the most part. But I was like, okay, like if you're really in a jam and you have no goalies, like call me, like I'll bail you out, I'll do it. So Tristan, like Storm's brother, had just borrowed my stuff for their team because I would not play for them either. I'm like, no, sorry, like busy that day, don't want to play net. But I go and bust the pads out and like find everything, and like there was a strap that was fucked up, so I had to redo the toe laces or whatever. But then I get looking through my bag and I was like, oh shit, I don't remember doing this. And I had bought myself a new pair of goalie pants and a new pair of like a new can. Like I just had totally forgot that I even did it, though. It'd been so long since I opened the bag. I was like, oh shit. Well, maybe I should play more net. I got nice stuff. So what am I waiting for here?
You totally forgot.
I totally forgot that I had bought new gear. It's kind of, I feel like there's some lapses in memory here.
Totally. Well, you didn't remember us auditioning for Amazing Race.
When was that? Was that around like the PBR China timeline, or was that like before, after, like when did that even happen?
I want to say it was like, yeah, probably somewhere around like 2014, 2015 ish. Like,
jeez.
I remember like doing a Skype interview and they were like asking why you and me would be so good at this thing. And well, I was bullshitting about it. And
yeah,
it was something. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't even an Amazing Race. It was some sort of reality thing. But
really,
because it wasn't the Big Brother one. That was totally separate.
Yeah, you're going to make out with somebody on that one for $1 million, right? Or what was the deal?
I said I'd make out with anyone. I got on the show, and that's when we were going to China, and I bailed out of Big Brother.
Yeah.
And but no, this other one was separate. But I, again, it's been so many years. I have such a lapse of memory too. But I definitely remember auditioning, and I think they like reached out to you or something. But I know that I was on a call with them, and this casting director was like quizzing me why we'd be so great, and I thought I told him enough, and never happened. But
apparently not.
We would
I
have been
meant,
great, whatever it was.
Well, we could still do that. Like, we could still apply. We could still send our stuff in.
Rodeo's had some representatives on those shows, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and funny story. So the guest on the show this week, Rope Myers, I met him at Just McKee's broadcast clinic back in January. And who else was there? None other than, I think he was the guest of episode 85, but it was Cord McCoy. So Cord,
he was on Amazing Race.
Yeah, exactly. So Cord and his brother Jet were on, and I think they did it 3 different times. So, I think like us cowboys, like we do know how to travel. So I think we could do okay. The only thing that I'd have a bad time on is the flying at times. I'd have to probably get some drugs to be able to sleep when I was flying. Or I would just like fly through the fear and the whatever, and I'd probably just get by it. I don't know.
Fear would not be a factor for you, Ted. I think you could do it.
You know what I couldn't do, though? I couldn't do the show Fear Factor. I would have a bad time with that show.
That was my segue into that.
I would not do well at that one.
What would be the one thing, if they had the $1 million sitting there, what would be the one thing you couldn't do on that show? Like,
reptiles, fish, eating something rotten, eating something really gross, or like spiders or scorpions or like any kind of creepy crawly shit, snakes. Like, I'd be
everything
fucked.
You just said, everything you just said is the whole premise of every aspect of your family.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, I could do none of that. Yeah, I'd be fucked on that show. It would not happen for me. The only thing that I'd be able to do is like the Wipeout style show, or like the Ninja Warrior one, or whatever the hell. Like that show, I could do like the obstacles and jump around and like, you know, parkour my way around that shit, but that'd be the only thing I could do.
And former guest of the show, Devin Meazey, was on Wipeout Canada, wasn't he?
Man, I think he had to fly to Argentina for that. I forgot about that, but we should have talked to him on the show about that. Fuck, I forgot.
Yeah, that was pretty wild when he was on there. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they flew him to Argentina to film that. It was something really wild.
Well, I think these like casting directors for reality shows where people got to do dumb shit must like to hover around rodeo people or something, because
a bit.
I remember when I got the casting director for Big Brother was at the CFR.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, you met them at the CFR, like in Edmonton?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
In Edmonton when I was doing the TV with Dave, and they were downstairs and they were like wandering around like chatting with people.
Really?
They were specifically typecasting, I think, trying to find someone in the rodeo world.
Oh, really? No way.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that, though, because even Cord, like, we were talking briefly. I don't know if it was to the class or if it was kind of like him and I at a table, but he was like, yeah, I think they thought we're going to be just a couple of hillbillies that, like, didn't know how to travel and, like, had never been in, like, read a map before and, like, hadn't been out of their home county. But he's like, yeah, we, like, totally surprised them and just showed up and, like, kicked ass, because we were like, yeah, like, we know how to travel. Like, this is what we do every
what
week.
We do.
So,
yeah. I think they definitely liked that, because when I was going to go on Big Brother, like, all my stuff, they wanted me in a cowboy hat. They wanted me to bring cowboy clothes to the show, like everything.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I was like, I don't wear that. I don't wear a cowboy hat when I'm just hanging out. And they're like, no, you wear a cowboy hat. I'm like, okay.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was a deal with Cord and them. I never asked that question, but it probably would be. Hey, like, that's their character on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they were looking for.
I think we should look at that, Dustin. I think we could do it. And I think
we
could do well.
You know what we got to do for our shows? We got to try and get like some behind the scenes on some of those reality shows. We need to get a reality show person on to talk about, like.
Well, funny you say that, Dustin. Funny you say that, because who did I play poker with last week?
Yeah,
fucking Man Tracker, Terry Grant.
See, we need to know the secrets behind the camera. We should get him as a guest.
Well, I've got his phone number, so I think he's agreed to do the show. We just haven't done it yet. But I thought what we should do is record a show with Man Tracker where he tries and finds us. Like, we got to do like, but I think we should bring Storm as our guide / camera person to like actually know how to survive.
Yeah. But Ted, I won orienteering in grade 9 in the Kara school division. So I know how to get around the wilderness.
Really?
And if you don't know what orienteering is,
I don't.
You don't know orienteering in gym class, you used to get the map. You had to go punch they had these stations where they had a little punch and you had to find the station based on coordinates and maps. And when you filled your card with all the certain punches, you'd win.
Oh, okay. Well, I was good at that too back in the day.
It would cover acres and acres of land. Like, we did it out in like river valleys and it was like a big thing. And yeah.
And you were the champ.
I was the champ in grade 9.
See, I think I could do that, but like the whole camping out and finding food for the evening, although I could just huck a couple Cliff bars in my pocket and, you know, as long as I had some good shoes, some good hiking boots, which I have, I'd probably be like not bad.
Okay. We are turning this into an epi. We're going to go survival mode into the hills one night and we'll.
No, but with Man
with
Tracker.
Man
Like, he's got to track
totally.
Us.
Yeah.
And make an episode out of it.
Yeah. Totally.
And then park at the, like, probably at the Longview, like the Twin Cities or somewhere over there and do a whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll put that on the docket. People will want it.
That'd be entertaining, wouldn't it? We got to do it like in like June when it's warm enough, or July or August, like before it gets cold at night.
Yeah.
And lots of daylight. Yeah. So it's not too dark and I'm not afraid of the dark.
We can't do it in July during Stampede, because I think Terry's one of the Outriders
Truck-riding
on the
committee.
track for the runaway wagons, right?
Yeah, he definitely is.
Yeah.
So can't do that. But
cool.
Anyways,
Okay.
it's on the docket.
A reality show interest will continue on here.
Yeah.
And we'll do something fun with it.
We'll make a plan. But speaking of the entertainment business, our friend Cor Blunt, friend of the show, got some new music out. El Viejo just dropped in the last couple weeks here. I forgot to mention it on the last show. Wanted to make sure we mentioned that. There's a couple new cool new songs on there. Out on a Win is a neat one. It's about an old fighter that just wants to win one more time. Another one that I like on there is called Old Familiar Drunken Feelings. So Corb got a story about getting like when weed kind of first started making it. When it was first legal back in the but I don't know what the timeline was. But he said he got really, really messed up on the edibles or something. And then he was like, he had to drink through the high until he was drunk. And then he was like, oh, yeah, no, okay, I'm good now that I'm drunk. Like, I know this feeling. So he has a whole song
Oh,
about the
drunk.
old
Yeah.
old familiar drunken feeling. It's
That's
quite
a good one.
entertaining. Yeah. So,
And he's
anyways.
touring, right?
Pardon? Yeah, he's on tour right
He's
now.
on
He
tour.
just, I think he probably just finished up the Canadian side of it. And he's going into the U.S. He's going to be around a bunch and then
He's
back
going to
up
Europe,
here.
too, isn't he?
Yeah, he is actually in like a little bit later in May. So,
Is it with the Dead South or no? Do I got that wrong?
I think you're right. Yeah, I think he's opening for the Dead South and he has a few of his own shows over there. So,
yeah, so that's
anyway,
cool.
poorblund.com. Make sure to check it out. He'll be one of the next big shows that we'll be at together. Last year we had three of them, I think, in the same summer, but this year we definitely got one in Brooks, Coy Larson Memorial PBR, May 10th. Brooks, what do they call it? The Brooks Centennial Arena. Is that right?
Centennial Regional Arena, yeah.
Yeah, so Dustin, you've been there for lots of hockey games over the years, the Brooks Bandits, and gonna have PBR Canada start about 7 o'clock, I believe, if I know remember the schedule right, and then Corb will be on the stage probably like 9:30, 9:45 kind of timeline, and gonna be a hell of a show there. So make sure to
And
get
then
your
he's
tickets
playing in
on sale now.
Drumheller this summer as well in August. So
Oh, is he? Oh, there you go.
playing the amphitheater on they do a concert weekend, three concerts, three nights. So Corb's opening it Friday night, I seen, and then I think they have Serena Ryder Saturday, and then Blue Rodeo to wrap it up
Serena
Sunday.
Ryder, that's decent
Yeah,
too.
so it'll be a
Right
good
on.
little weekend in Drumheller if you want to check that out, and then go to Barney's.
There, yeah, exactly. Barney's. Man, I enjoy our time at Barney's. I look forward to going back there sometime too. Be good.
Yeah.
But summer, it feels like almost like summer. It was like probably, I don't know what the conversion is into Fahrenheit. It's probably about 65, but it was like 17 Celsius today outside here in Calgary. Just totally beautiful.
Yeah, it was patio weather, and then we're going to get reminded that it's still winter by
Yeah.
Wednesday.
Yeah, it's going to snow a bunch again, isn't it?
Yeah, 20 to 30 centimeters, and that's the end of that.
Yeah. But we need the moisture. But
We need the moisture. Big wet snow.
one thing that I forgot to mention, replay at Houston, just 1 year late.
Yeah. Bo Cooper's probably really excited that this is happening.
Sorry, Bo.
But they're just doing it for the finals, which is cool. So you can't not win the 50 the right way this year.
Yeah, that's good. It's good they did it. Just like we said, a year later. But
yeah.
Sorry, Bo. Man, I forgot to mention too, I don't know who it was now. Would it be Ty Harris's brother that did a documentary
I
on
think
like
so.
calf roping or tie down roping? So apparently he just stole some like footage from ours and just put it in and like didn't ask permission or nothing. And then Storm called him out. He's like, hey, she's like, hey, what the heck, man? And he's like, oh, you didn't want the free exposure? And we're like, you didn't even ask. Like, you know, if you asked like and told us what you're up to, like maybe you would, but like what, why don't you, like why would you just steal something like that? It's not okay. It was like really from a video from our podcast, like we're recording right now, and they just took it.
Yeah, with Bo.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, but I think he did a really good job on the documentary side of things, but I was just a little bit disappointed in the business side of not really asking
You're
about
gonna
it.
steal the shit. Ask first.
Yeah, you could, like, it would have been okay if you would have asked, but you didn't ask. So,
and I don't know, but I'm sure we'll talk about it on some pod. Can I tease that there's some, I'm not gonna say who, but a really cool person ordering some cowboy shit this week,
oh,
last week?
yeah,
Can we talk
I don't
about
know.
that?
I don't know what we're allowed to say on that, but or what we should say on that. We should probably wait until they get the stuff and maybe
Okay.
it leaks out in the public. Maybe that'd be the way to go.
Yeah. I hope it comes up organically somewhere, but let's tease it with like someone really cool about some cowboy shit.
Yeah. And then what else, how else, what else should we say about that? Because, we can give some hints further down the line, but anyways, we'll leave it at that.
A
Let's get to
big
the
rock
interview this week.
star. A big rock star.
Yeah, it's very, very true. Anyways, yeah, man, well, speaking of that, actually, Corb's been wearing our hat on the tour too, the
Yeah,
whole
I
Canadian
seen
tour.
that.
He's
Yeah.
wearing the whole thing. So another shout out to Corb. Make sure you get his new tunes. He's on tour right now. Make sure you go see him. Cowboy shit, but Corblund.com. And we'll be back right after this with our interview this week. Grote Myers coming up right after the break.
Lord, all I wanna do is go out on a win. Feel the ref raise my arm up, feel it again. Styles make fights and waste time in the gym. All I wanna do is go out on a win.
This week on the show, he's a 9-time Wrangler NFR qualifier, a 2002 Olympic gold medalist in Salt Lake City, the 2001 world champion steer wrestler with over $1 million in career earnings, coming to us today from the arena in Van, Texas. Please welcome Rope Myers.
Glad to be here, Ted. Glad to be here.
Rope, it was really great to meet you a couple weeks ago at the announcer broadcast clinic that Justin McKee put on. And I felt like we connected there, had a good visit. But then we get talking about doing a show. And then we get talking some more. And you spent a lot of time in the CCA, and I had no idea. But for those that might not know, the Canadian Cowboys Association, Foothills Cowboys Association, Chinook Rodeo Association, you mentioned, Rope. A lot of the semi-pro organizations up here in Southern Alberta, all of Saskatchewan essentially, but talk about how you ended up there and why you were rodeoing there in the early 90s. Actually, I was talking to JP Veach about this too, and he said you guys rodeoed together, won the CCA around the same time. But how the heck does a guy from Van, Texas end up in the CCA?
Well, you know, I was going to college at Sam Houston, and it's hot Texas in the summer, and I was amateur rodeoing down here. And I had a friend of mine that had been to some clinics of ours, and he had a the first year he had a he was rodeoing up there, and he had he owned a dealership in Swift Current, and he said I could come work for him. I guess probably not, the Canadians don't need to know that, but back in the day I worked for him for cash on the weekdays, and then we would rodeo all weekend and go all over Saskatchewan. And that first year I lived in Swift Current, which is I don't recommend anybody. Then the second year I moved to Southern Alberta, and literally in the middle of nowhere, 60 miles north of Havre, Montana, and 60 miles east of Minneberries. And I mean, literally in the middle of nowhere, huge ranch, got to work out there, loved working out there, living out there. And I won a ton of money in the Canadian rodeos. They paid good. It was a great place to be. It was a great place to experience a different style, type, all those kinds of ways in competition, and is able to win quite a bit up there, and enjoyed my summers in Canada.
So you don't have to mention the dealership in Swift Current. You don't want to incriminate anybody 30 years later, but who were the people up there, and who were you hanging out with at the time? What was the, well, yeah, who were you rodeoing with?
Jim Wilton was the guy in Canada and or in Swift Current, and then he rodeoed in the professionals levels up there as well. And Marty Becker, I tied a lot of calves with him. You guys would know him. Blaine Wahlberger is the guy's place I stayed in Southern Alberta. Actually, the place next to him is Seville's, which has at the time had one of the largest single owner horse sales in North America. And so they would, it was kind of a funny place that he would let me rope calves over there. I could rope as many as I wanted on my horses, as long as I roped as many as on his horses, his colts, as I did on my horses. And first day I was up there, I'm riding a bunch of his colts, and about the fourth one I get on, I come across there and she breaks in two. And I mean, they're pretty bronky. I mean, these are Canadian horses, you know? And so he breaks in two, and I was able to ride him. And I made the foolish, 20-year-old statement of, you ain't got anything here that could throw me off. And so they commenced for the rest of the summer to test whether that was true or not.
So mostly full-time time event guy, but also part-time rough stock guy.
Well, the funny thing about that is, in Canada, the the all arounds are oftentimes one, you have to enter both ends of the arena.
It only changed 2 years ago, Rope.
Yeah. And when I was going, that was the way it was, you know? And so, so I tell people I've the highest average in the saddle bronc riding about anybody. I've ridden three and I've won two saddles. And so,
oh, really?
On three and won two saddles. So because of the all arounds being like that, I would enter. There's a couple of rodeos up there that gave all around saddles at the rodeos themselves. And so
like
I
Wood Mountain, wasn't it?
Saddle bronc riding at it. And, you know, I would always tell the photographers are like, you can take a picture in the ride, but if I make it to the pickup, man, you get a picture of me getting off on him. And so, so my one picture, I have a couple, but the one picture I keep that my kids can see is, of me getting off on the pickup, man, and the saddle bronc riding.
Really? And these were both like the three at Canadian rodeos.
Yeah. All Canadian rodeos. It's the only place I did that. So really? One was over in Manitoba. I think it was,
Swan River.
I think it wasn't Swan River, but it was another one. But anyway, I
Verdun or
yeah, there it was.
Verdun,
yeah. So
oh, really, that's yeah, awesome. So. I would have never thought it. Like I had no idea. And yeah, we're kind of
entirely too big to be a saddle bronc rider. Yes, that's correct.
that wasn't what I was saying. I would think a guy like Rod Warren would be kind of similar size, would he not? And he was a bulldogger too.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some guys back in the day that were a little larger, but now most of them are little, and
that's
true. And it's probably an advantage.
That's true. So you rodeo up here, and you mentioned winning a lot of money. So what was a lot back then? Like I remember the amateur, you know, semi pro rodeos when I was going to those, and that was in probably 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in that range, and the people that had a good year won like $30,000, which was pretty solid. Yeah. Pretty decent amount of money to rodeo for, you know, for us it's only about 15 to 20 weeks that we have a season when it gets warm enough. So for you, you know what, I don't even know how to look back at the CCA stats. So back in
91, I won that second summer I was up there. I won 25,000 in the 3 months I was up there in the summertime. So
yeah, June, July, August.
Good summer. Yeah.
Holy.
I would come up right after the college national finals and then just stay and just, you know, it was at the time it was in Bozeman, Montana. And so I'd just come up right after it. I'd go to a few rodeos on the way up and then I'd just head to Canada.
And so this was prior to your pro career because it was early 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. My rookie year was right after that. And so I left there from the finals and came back and got ready for Kansas City, which was the year rodeo that started, you know, right at the CCA finals. Actually, back then you couldn't compete during the same year in a amateur rodeo. They, you know, that was before they had that rule kind of gone. Actually, that was the year that rule got taken out of place. And because of that, I couldn't go to the, I think it was the, I went to the CCA finals, but I couldn't go to the Chinook finals or the FCA finals. I can't remember which one, because it was a week after the cutoff, which would let me go to all those rodeos. So the PRCA rodeos in my rookie season. So.
So your first year was, what was it, 92 or 4?
92 was my rookie year, yeah.
Rookie year. And then it's, you know, 9 years before you win the world title, but you go to the NFR nine different times.
So my rookie year, I missed the finals by $287.
No way.
Yeah, that's a little tough. That's a cheat. But, I missed the finals by $287 my rookie year. My second year, I was seventh in the world. I was out in California during those rodeos, that California run, you know, right after Oakdale and Red Bluff, you know, and I tore my ACL. So I was out the rest of that season. I came back the next year, which was my third year in the PRCA, and ended up 16th again, a little more money. I think it's like, I missed the finals by like 1500 that year. And then the next year was the first year I made the finals. And that year, it came down to the very last go around of the finals. I was, we knew before we run the steer, I had to place two spots ahead of Oakberry in the go around. I was going last, but I had to place two spots ahead of him in the go around or move up in the average is my only way to catch him. And he went right before me and went to the lead in the round. So I obviously couldn't. I ended up, I think I went fourth in the round, but I couldn't catch him. But as soon as so, which we were talking a little bit about this down there, is one of the things that I want for our bulldoggers right now. It hasn't kind of happened where two guys come down to the end and both of them do all they can and just one of them overcomes. You know what I'm saying? I feel like in the last couple of years, it's been a great bulldogging, but it's always been somebody falling apart at the end. You hate that for them. You know what I'm saying? You want two guys to do their very best and it just turns out that one did a little bit better. You don't want them to break the barrier in the last go around. You know, that's heartbreaking. You don't really want that. You want two of them to kill it and then one of them come out victorious. So
you go to your first NFR and finish reserve champ then? Yeah. By how much money?
Oh, it was about, I don't know, it was probably 4,000 or 5,000. I mean, that was how much, 3,000 or 4,000, whatever the difference was in that go around or whatever. So,
yeah.
So or maybe it's a little more than that. I can't remember the exact amount. It's the first loser. So,
yeah, understandable. So then what are the next few years like? That have been a lot of fun along the ways when you're making the finals every year. I noticed one spot though, you missed it for a year, then you came back one more year, and then that was the end. What was that year off? That's probably a
It's an interesting thing. It has a Canadian connection in it too. So
hope it's not bad.
In 2001, the year I won the world, early in that year, actually really early, is Rapid City, which, you know, is in February. And, we were up there and that we were staying, we did a few church services up in the area. And the same night, my wife and I both kind of got woke up in the middle of the night, and we were just felt like there was two things that the Father had kind of put in front of us. And one was that, we were supposed to put our place up for sale. I mean, we had loved our house, loved our place, and we were supposed to put it up for sale. And the second thing was that in 2002, the next year, I was not going to rodeo for a living. And at the time, I really thought it was probably the end of my rodeo career. I just felt like it was something that the Father was asking me to do. Didn't really understand it. Didn't really kind of get it, but was willing to do it. So that year went, and I mean, it went as bad as it could go. I mean, like everything like went, like you can't even imagine how many times it went poorly. And actually it was in the spring. I had like 5,000 won. I mean, nothing, you know, I mean, like zero, that's almost like nothing, you know? And I was speaking someplace and I was like going, I said, you know, down here, one of the kind of, or back in those days, there was a time when the Buffalo Bills had come back from a long ways, like 30 some points down on the Houston Oilers at the time, and came back to beat them in the second half. And I was like, I told the guys, I was like going, yeah, I know I'm a long ways down, but you know, this is the kind of year that when it's all said and done, this is going to be a great story. And so that year went like that. There were several times where I just was like going, look, I'm not going to rodeo next year. I'll just go home. I don't have to stay out here and stay at it. And I just kept, just every time that would happen, I just kept getting confirmation from somebody, my dad, my wife, some friend, whatever it was, that I was supposed to stay hooked and stay out there. So it came down to Oklahoma City, which at that time was still a part of that year. It didn't, you know, wasn't like now where it's cut off right before Oklahoma City. And I'm like 25th. I'm a long ways out. I'm a month left in the season. I'm like 25th. And I'm at Oklahoma City, and I see Curtis Cassidy ride Willie at Oklahoma City, and he's in the top 15. And I'm watching Willie go, and I was like going, and that time nobody had ever ridden him at the finals. And I watched Willie go, and I was like, there's a part of me is like going, man, I would love to ride that horse in Vegas. And as soon as I said that, I felt like the Father said to me, well, why don't you go ask him? So there I go. I'm long ways from making the finals. It looks like I got no chance, and I have to go up to Curtis and kind of, you know, swallow my pride and say, you know, hey, I know it doesn't look like I'm going to make the finals. I know I'm a long ways out or whatever, but if I make it, is there any way I could ride Willie when I get there? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, you can ride him. I'm sure he was probably thinking, oh, that's not going to happen. Well, from that day on, I pretty much won every first everywhere I nodded my head. I mean, from the tour finals to the Cow Palace to everything. Anyway, I ended up making it in, ended up making the finals in 14th place. Unfortunately, my brother knocked Curtis out of the top 15. So I had to call him back and say, hey, please come still bring the horse. And so then he came out there, brought Willie, and I rode him at the finals there, placed in 9 go arounds and set, you know, still have the average record at the finals on 37.4 seconds on 10 heads. So kind of a cool Canadian connection for that little story. So.
Dang. So I wonder how many guys won the world on Willie in that
four
time
more span. Guys after I rode him, four more guys won the world on him.
Really? But not in a row, because Sid Sid no. wouldn't have rode that.
Yeah,
that horse.
Sid didn't ride him. Yeah, but yeah.
Oh wow, well that's pretty neat. And Kurt, and they only lost Willie like what last year? He only passed away a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So as far as just I guess sidebar talking about Willie, has to be one of if not the greatest bulldog and horses ever.
Well, he definitely was for that place. I mean, for, and you know, it's kind of one of those things because people ride him. They, when I got on him there, they all thought I was crazy. They're like, why are you riding Willie at the, you know what I'm saying? They didn't think he would be, but there was just something about him. I was like going, yeah, whatever, but there he's going to be perfect. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, cause he had a, he just was really flat and really strong right there. You know what I'm saying? And he would get a little lost sometimes in bigger pens and stuff, but man, right there, he was awesome, you know? And, he'd score really good on him, and I like. Yeah. I really got to get a riding. So.
When you say he was right there, for those that might not know steer wrestling like you, you mean he scores really well. He's right on the steer.
Well, it's two different
in your
things.
Place, right?
Both. It's scoring really well, but it's also the ability to accelerate early, fast. You know what I'm saying? It may not have. It's the difference in 40 speed, you know, and the ability to run. You know, for the full 100-yard dash or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So they're both sprinter qualities, but it's that off the line thing that's really the most important in Vegas.
And I don't know enough about the horsepower side of things, but just assuming then that Willie wouldn't be a horse that we would see at Pinoco or Cheyenne or Pendleton with the long scores, right?
Well, and you could ride him there, but it wasn't really his bread and butter. His bread and butter was that quick. Right now, flat across the line. Flat means that, so some horses leave and they really kind of go like this and push out of there, and some of them leave real flat. You know, you just think of like the torque that you see now, and especially in like in the a lot of these electric vehicles, the way they, you know, have that instant torque. Maybe not the overall power that squeals the tires, but that instant torque that just gets the thing moving right away.
See, I want to talk about winning the world, and the next year going to the Olympics and winning that too. And then going all the way to missing the NFR in 02. Like there's a lot that happened within a year.
Yeah. So in you know, I of course, you know, the father said, yeah, I wasn't going to rodeo for a living in 2002. So I didn't, you know, I went, I knew that was going to happen before the finals ever took place. I felt like that was what the plan was. And so then the finals comes, you know, I win, you know, 9 out of 10 rounds. I get to go to the Olympics in Salt Lake City, and I win everything. I win nearly everything there. I won a round, won second round, and won the final round, and won the average, or won the total. It wasn't an average; it was a, you know, semifinals thing. But so that was kind of just a really great cherry on top. But that year, I went to like, you know, I went to a few rodeos, but I didn't rodeo for a living. And a lot, oftentimes people would ask me, you know, after that year is like, have you come down yet from the high of winning the world title? And I told a lot of people, like, it wasn't the summit. That year I got to go so many places and share my life, my testimony, what the Father's done, what God's done, what Jesus did in my life, all the things that happened up to that. I like, even now, it's like, it's hard for me to really say, but I think it's fairly conservative number, but I got to be there and witness probably around 10,000 people come to know Jesus that year, both here and in Africa and in Canada and just everywhere. You know, I mean, just, I got to go a lot of places. I mean, we were driving home and my phone was just ringing off the hook about people that wanted us to come speak and my wife to do music. And we got to do a lot of things we couldn't have done any other way. And it's kind of cool that, you know, we knew that. And so I didn't even know for sure if in 2003, I was going to go back to rodeo, but I was able to go back in 2003 and 2004 and compete, had two good finals, had two good years. And I've told people this before, as good as I bulldogged at the finals in 2001, and 2004 was the best I've ever bulldogged at that finals. I was 44 on 10 head. And I, there was one pen that had, they were all spotted good looking steers, and there were four blacks. And that was the pen that run four times. And I had all four of those blacks, and none of them were very good. And the last one I had in the 10th round, and I mean, the fastest they'd been on that steer was like 5.9, and I won the last go around on that steer, the very last steer I run at the finals. He run real hard, or running way down the pin, and was able to slam him, and it was kind of a cool kind of exclamation point, which led right into me now working at Sky. I took over this job in November of that year, and so right before the NFR, and then so anyway, that's the beginning of the end for me. So
And you've been doing that ever since.
I have this will be this summer will be my 20th summer of just it's really kind of cool. It was to have a dream of something that you could do and have nothing there. You know what I'm saying? Like, there wasn't, like, when I got here, what they called an arena was about a 50 by 50 square little pin that was barely bigger than a round pin that they would just do little fun games on horseback so the kids could watch it. To now we have, you see in our background, we have a 100 and 160 by 300 pin with a, you know, that we have 5 weeks of rodeo camp. We get kids from inner city kids to, you know, suburb kids to all kinds of kids that have never been on a horse, but just know that there's something they want in a horse. You know, they're just, there's something that draws people to horses. It's just a powerful thing, you know, and we get to come, they get to come out here, and we teach them how to run barrels and tie goats and rope and really get their, you know, wet their whistle, so to speak, of the whole rodeo world. And I have to tell all the parents when they come to pick them back up, hey, you can't hold it against me if they come home wanting to buy horses and you have only a backyard that's about 20 by 20.
How did the Sky Ranch come to be? What's the story there, and how did you end up there?
Well, you know, Sky Ranch has been around for a long time, nearly coming on 70 years, been here for a long time. When we, I, people used to ask me, how did I end up in Van, Texas, of all places? It's not really this kind of real rodeo capital, but my dad was living at Athens at the time. I was looking for a place. I wanted to be about an hour from the Metroplex. So if I wanted to fly out, I wanted to have, I had a few things that were important. I wanted sandy soil to have a good arena. I wanted about 50 acres. And I finally found a place with 55 acres, a good sandy soil, and a house on it. And I will tell you this, that when I bought that house, it had, get this now, I'm a bulldogger, had baby blue cabinets with pink hearts this big in the middle of the cabinets. And so it was not necessarily, I was not buying it for the house, but it was the perfect place for us. We lived here for a long time, and I saw the sign that said the Sky Ranch, and I didn't know what Sky Ranch was at the time. I thought it was like this home for wayward boys or something, you know. I didn't really know what it was. And little later in my career, I started to give a tithe. I would give what I called a tithe of my season. I don't know if it was exactly a tithe, but I would give up about 6 weeks of my season to go. I had a place in Idaho, a place in Colorado, a camp in Western Oklahoma, and a camp in South Texas, and a and one in Nevada too, that I would go and help them with their camp for a week, and I would go give my time and my instruction, those kind of things. And I told my wife, I was like, oh man, I wish there was a way we could do that right here where we live, not knowing that this was out here or anything like it, you know. And it just so happened that they had been going through the same kind of thought of, you know, hey, horses are an expensive activity if we're just going to do head to tail trail rides. And so they asked, so they got it introduced to my wife. She sang at an event. They invited her out, and pretty soon I'm here. And there I'm taking their program. At the time, I was supposed to just take their program and have 1 week of rodeo camp. I was kind of a consultant. And after the first time we did it, it was just, it took on, and it caught, and it became a thing. And now we're nearly 20 years in.
So for those that don't know, Van is just about, you said about an hour, and it's south east of Dallas.
Pretty much straight east of Dallas, right on
Straight east of
I-20.
Dallas.
Yeah.
So you have 5 weeks of rodeo camps now where it's kids from, you know, kind of like anywhere.
Yeah.
Zero rodeo experience. But for those some people listening might have a kid, but what are the qualifications to go to those schools? And then tell us more after that about the elite clinics that you do as well, where you got like there's some really high level stuff. There's some great video content too that I found doing some research for the show and whatnot. But talk about like who gets to come, how it all works, who funds it, how does it work?
Sure. So our young riders and fillies camps are just, they're just straight beginners. It just happens if you're the right age. And well, the biggest difficulty to get in those camps is getting in, because I mean, like right now, I think there's probably, I don't know the number exactly, but probably over 50 people on the wait list just to come to them. I mean, they're just every year we get camp gets done in August. We open up bookings in September for the following year. And usually by the end of September, especially all the girls spots, they're completely full by then. And so that's all that is. And then throughout the rest of the year, after the summer months, we have, we do about four steer wrestling clinics. And then we do at least two calf rope and breakaway clinics. And then we do at least two barrel racing clinics. And that Lynn McKenzie, my brother Cash, Larry D guys come down our breakaway clinic. And then we have our elite clinic, and our elite clinic is, it's really geared for kids that have qualified for the national high school finals, or really, you know, maybe Texas high school champions and those kind of things, or Texas high school qualifiers. Those kids, sign up for it. It is a group of, we take 15 per event, breakaway roping, goat tying, steer wrestling team, and calf roping. Blair Burke is our calf roping instructor, and Cash and Blair do the calf roping. I of course do the steer wrestling. This year, Martha Angeloni was our breakaway instructor. So when we have amazing instructors, Timber Darnell is an amazing goat tying instructor. She's done it for us. Susanna Montero Williams has done it. We've been blessed with amazing instructors, and our heart behind it is that most of the people that don't make it in the world of rodeo, it's seldom just because of a lack of skill and effort. Most of the time it's the other things that take them out. And we have a saying around here, it says, be one of the five. And the thought is there's 300 steer wrestlers in the PRCA. And so only five out of every 100 make the NFR. And of those other 95, only about 15 to 20 of them don't have the ability. So those other 80 don't make it, not because they don't have ability. They don't make it because they can't take care of their finances. They don't know how to market themselves. They don't know how to take care of their health and their fitness. They don't know how to take care of their horses and keep their horses in the top physical condition. They don't know how to compete. They don't know how to keep their confidence level up during the times when you're not winning. They don't know how to do the things that it takes to be a winner. And so that's really what we try to do at that clinic, is kind of take them to that next level, help them to maximize their skill and their skill levels.
So then I had it wrote down to ask you why guys like Luke Branquino and Tyler Wagaspack right now, what's setting them above where they're able to win that world title each year? What's the difference?
Well, I mean, the best thing that Wags does is, I mean, you know, to say it this way, is just he doesn't blink. You know, he never turns aside from his path. And that's why he's so successful. This year's finals is a perfect example. He did not, and I think he would say this, I hope it's okay if I say this, I don't think he'll say this, but he did not bulldog very good for the first two thirds of that finals. You know, he made some mistakes. He didn't score as good as he normally does. His horse wasn't working as good as he normally does. He just kind of wasn't getting steers to hit as flat as he typically does, but he just stayed with his program. He didn't panic. He didn't try to make it happen. He didn't try to force it, any of those kind of things. Come down to the last run, and he maximized, I mean, really, he made really basically two really good runs at the finals. The rest of them were okay, but they were just, you know, they were solid, but he stayed with, in himself and stayed there. And then pretty soon, you know, the other guys stubbed their toe and he's the champ. And that's not, it's not a downgrade on him. Matter of fact, it's like, I call it the ultimate in, I mean, it's the Tiger Woods effect. So many times Tiger Woods would just continue to play his game, and then those guys would shoot themselves in the foot somewhere on the back nine of Augusta, you know?
And what about Luke? And then we can even go back further. Oat Berry, he won it. Did he win it three or four times? It's like maybe three, four.
So, I mean, so you know, Luke also is one of those guys that, you know, Luke, I feel like that of all the guys that I've watched at his prime could do as much or more with any steer that he runs as anybody I've ever seen. You know what I'm saying? That's not to take away from anybody else. I just feel like when he was absolutely maxed out, he could do more with, you know. So I have this kind of philosophy in steer wrestling that, you know, say you have 50 steers and a pen of steers. There's five steers everybody can place on. There's five steers nobody can place on. So the other 40 steers really determines your ability. You know, how many of those steers in a two-head rodeo, you know what I'm saying, can you still stay in the average on? You know, can you win a little check, even if it's a little check? How many of those steers are a part of your tool bag that gives you a chance to win? And Luke is probably the guy that had as many steers as ever, you know, in that full setup. You know, Wags, one of the things he does that is, it was like guys like Byron Walker had. It was guys like, you know, there are a lot of other guys through the years that did that is that Wags, he is not afraid to win first on a good one. And that seems like a silly thing to say, but there's a lot of guys that when they have a good one, they might win something, but they'll win third on it. You know what I'm saying? They'll always win third, but they won't, you know what I mean? Wags will win first on that one. He won't let that one get away from him, you know? And that's in a year's time over throughout the year, a season, that makes a lot of difference in who wins up being the world champ.
Is that specifically scoring or the finish or? I watched one of the videos.
It's a little bit scoring. A lot of times the guys will. So two things. One is scoring. A lot of times guys will have a good one, and because he's good, they'll be a little safe. You know, also with the finish, sometimes guys will get in the way of a good one. You kind of got to let a good one be good. You know what I'm saying? Like you've got to let him go do the work for you. And, you know, we say this kind of as a joke at our schools, but that the steers are faster, more agile, quicker, sometimes even better looking than the steer wrestlers. So we've got to let the steers do the work for us. If we do the work, we can still get it done, but it's going to be slower. If we can get them to join us in that process, and then we can get the flatter, faster, quicker falls.
So when you say let them do the work, I don't know what you mean. I'm curious.
Okay,
now.
Like, well, let me help you with that. So
should I find a clip we can break down?
Yeah, so it's very similar to any other wrestling event. You're trying to use their strength, speed, and agility against him. So what we do when we catch the steer is we move his head out from in line with his body. Okay. So then when he's coming forward, we take his head down and move his head out from in line with his body when we catch him. So he doesn't want those two things. He's trying to pull and he's trying to lift. So we've taken his head out from in line with his body, and then he's going to follow his head. And with that much momentum, he's going to follow his head in around that corner. Now, what happens with the steer is that, sorry, the stupid cat's come up here trying to get in the way.
No worries.
But as he comes around that corner, it's just like your truck. It has more power in first gear and more speed in fifth gear. So we want speed versus power. Speed makes fast times, power makes slow times. And first gear is slower and he has the power. So we want to keep him going as fast as he can, as he comes around that corner. And if we do that, and he's coming with all that speed and agility, we're not having to use his power against him. We're just allowing him to go do it for us. And so then at the right time, in the middle of that, and timing is a big part of it, we turn the head over and then the steer hits and lands flat.
And so you're saying with going back to a guy like Luke or you say Luke could turn a bad one into a good one, and saying that he could still, like, is that technique or out muscling that animal or
what? Never. It's so seldom muscling.
Yeah, you know what I'm probably saying? Never really, honestly.
I mean, we want to be strong, you know what I'm saying? And all those things are good, but it really is about being in perfect balance and perfect timing to allow the steer. And then there's another piece of it is that you also have bulldogging to be done right has to be done right on the edge of failure. You know what I mean? Like almost every great run I've ever made on a bad steer was this close from him escaping.
Really? And is that
Yeah.
because of the like the inside horn, outside horn? Like, is it that kind of whipping motion
Yeah.
when you
So
get
he's
down in
coming
there?
with so much speed and so much power as he comes around that corner, you have got to just go at it. You know what I'm saying? Like if you hesitate or if you try to hold or if you don't think you got it, he's going to be loose from you. But if you just at that moment, if you just reach in there and turn that head over with all that speed and action coming, then they come and hit flat. And like, there's been a lot of times, like Pendleton's a great example of it. I've threw steers at Pendleton, on the grass that are not good steers. And I've won a lot of money doing that, but they're coming with so much speed on that grass. And you're right on the edge of, just a wild, you know what I'm saying? Like just out of control. And the edge of out of control is where you can just hand, have the courage to just reach in there and hook it and going, you'll be surprised at how often that steer will turn over and hit and land flat. And I've hit with steers on Pendleton and slid, like after we hit flat on their side, where we slid another, 7 to 10 feet down the arena, got huge, road rash on my shoulder, but I got a good check too. So
Really? But what are you thinking right now? We want to keep going down this technical path on the bulldog side of things, or tell some
sure.
more
Well,
stories?
we can do either. I love one of my favorite things is our schools. My dad, which I've tried like crazy to get him in the Hall of Fame. I really think he deserves to be there. We've had so many guys. He started the steer lesson schools in 1969, and he had them all the way through till 91. And I give him credit for a lot. I mean, I don't know that everybody does, but I feel like a lot of the ways that bulldogging is faster now than it was, in the 70s and stuff, is because of what he did. And it really comes down to this. He hit my mom, which God rest her soul, she was so great to do this. We had the old box, the huge box on the side, the camera that went up over your shoulder, and she would go to those and the old VHS tapes, and she would go to those slacks, like it, everywhere from Houston, San Antonio, Fort Worth. They used to have 200 guys in the slack, and then another 100 in the second round of slack. And she would watch, and she would literally sit there and film for hours at a time those runs. And then my dad would just, and that you can remember the old, of course I'm old, maybe your viewers won't all be able to remember all those things, but they would be able to see those runs back and forth. And I see you got a run of me, as a teenager myself running one.
I thought
And
I
we
should
would
just bring
watch
this one
those
up.
runs over and over and over again until we could get it to till we could do it every time. So this is Larry Ferguson Hazen. This is me and as a 19-year-old going them. And what you see in these runs, you see what we're trying to do is you see where we're not really slowing the steer down. We're letting them come with all that speed around that corner. Here we got one in slow motion, so you can kind of see it a little differently. But we drop down in there. We got weight on the steer's back. We move the steer's head into our tracks, and we let him keep coming forward. And we turn the head over, and that's how you get that head to come out flat. We pull away from that back to the chute, and by turning that head over quick, we get a really fast fall. This here's a wide go. See, he steps out there, and I'm still able to turn the head over on a big old heavy steer. Still able to get him to hit flat like that. That's what we try to do. That was way back in the day. How'd you find those old
I was
videos?
looking it up quick, and you said old home videos. I thought it might be from further back.
Yeah, those aren't as far back. Those are quite a ways. Those are when I was, but even before that, she would have those old videos,
Yeah.
and your dad would break down that video over and over and over, watch all those guys, Roy Duvall, Skip Akers, Stan Williamson, all those guys, Clarence LeBlanc, all those really great guys from back in the day. He'd pick up one thing from this guy and one thing from that guy and one thing from that guy. And then he would use them schools as kind of a petri dish, so to speak, to fill out, how do we teach this and how do we get guys to be able to do those kind of things. And I remember one time in particular that was funny because Tom Ferguson, multiple world champions, all around champion, he did an interview with the Western Horseman, and in that he said that he wanted to catch the outside horn first. And it was so like, are you kidding me? And like even now, a lot of guys still teach to catch the left horn first. And Dad, when he heard it, was like, oh, that's not right. No, that can't be right. Like, he was certain it wasn't right because everybody taught to catch the inside horn first, you know. But then he started watching those videos and slowing them down. And a lot of guys that made really good runs would catch the outside horn first. Because if you go catch the inside horn, a steer will automatically pull his head to the right. I mean, they'll try to pull their head away from it. And you don't want them to go that way. You want them to go this way, you know. So it's just, that is a great example of just a way of being humble enough to say, I want to learn something today, and being willing to change what he was doing, even the way he'd been teaching lots of other guys to do it. So I give him a ton of credit for that technical knowledge, that technical know-how that makes all the difference.
Is it the start that's the most important part of the run, the catch, the, do you call it like the turn or the finish, or what, like what, if you're breaking it down between 3 points or four pieces, what is it?
Well, you know, so it's both. You know, golf is a great example.
I love to golf too. Written down.
And so the start is, I mean, if you're in the rough, you're done, right? You know what I'm saying? It's really hard to, I mean, you're just going to beg to make par if you shank your tee shot, right? But at the end of the day, it's the putter that usually has the best score, you know?
True.
And so it's both. You have to have a good start. You have to be able to score well, or be able to just, I mean, I will tell you that there are guys even now that don't necessarily score well, but they're smart enough to get on a horse that scores really well. Yeah. I mean, there are guys that don't necessarily can't. I mean, what you're talking about when it comes to the start is something that literally comes down to the milliseconds and a hundredth difference in when you react and the other guy reacts means about this much on the barrier, and that much on the barrier means two more strides down the arena where you can see that it's going to be almost impossible to overcome that. I mean, you can do it on a really good steer, but it's not going to work on the average steer, you know. The two steers being equal, the guy that's this much closer on the barrier is going to be really hard for him to overcome that in the field. So it's the start, but then it's also the finish. If you don't keep a steer with speed and you get heavy on, you let him get heavy and slow around that corner, then those steers come and they fall, and it just takes forever for that last, you know, the clock ticks so fast in through that point of time. So if you don't putt and you leave it, you know, on the lip, I mean, it's just another stroke and you can't do anything about that.
There's so many fun ways we could go from here too. There's so much. I'm a big into golf right now, kind of addicted in the golf side of things. After the competition side of rodeo, I haven't competed anything besides that since, you know, and yeah. I'm not that good at it yet, but it's a lot of the competition with myself.
Truth of it is, golf is a great, if you can get mentally strong at golf, it'll help you for your rodeo.
Yeah.
Cause there's nothing like golf to get you into the place of trying to force it, I'm going to make it happen. And that's just what happens in rodeo to so many guys cause there's times, you know, it just doesn't go well, you know, and the ability to come back and make the next shot. I love the legend of Bagger Vance. You know, that's a great, by the way, there's lots of great, I encourage, our students and stuff to watch several golf movies. The Legend of Bagger Vance. And the other one is, 7 Days in Utopia. Have you watched that movie?
I haven't.
It's a total golf movie, but it's a total mindset movie. If you can understand the mindset tools he's happening in that movie, it'll completely change your golf game. It'll change your rodeo. It'll change everything. But one of the things that happens in Bagger Vance when they're having the competition, I can't remember the exact wording of it, but he basically says that, you know, two terrible shots and an amazing shot will still make par. That was the one guy, you know, that the other guy was just consistent, you know, and he was the other guy. And you got to know who you are. There are guys in the PRCA that are like that. They make the brilliant run and they can make two really average runs, but over the year that brilliant run gets them to the finals, you know? And so it's understanding who you are and then being able to be that guy when it counts.
Okay. I got to go back to is there anything else on the clinic side of things or the schools that we want to get to or have to get to? I guess some of the higher end students that you've had come through that have had high success. Do you want to talk about that or Where else do you want to talk
We've
about
had
on
a
this
lot of
school?
guys. I don't like to out them with that because some of them, you know, came when they were younger. I mean, the most we've ever had that come through our clinics, we had an NFR where we had eight guys that have at the NFR that year were past students, you know, and stuff. And
Really?
so,
All I need is bulldogging?
yeah.
Holy smokes. That's a cool set. That's all you need to say there. Okay, Olympics though. I'm so fascinated by the rodeo at the Olympics, and it hasn't happened in 22 years now, but I don't know when and if it will ever happen again, but I've always thought it was neat to be on that stage, even if it was a cultural piece of the puzzle in Utah. But tell me about that experience and what your thoughts are, and if you think we might ever see it again too, like just kind of speculating, but what was it like to be there and then to win the whole dang thing?
Well, you know, the PBR has been a big I love the fact that the PBR has been able to kind of engage the Brazilians and the Australians and the Kiwis and even some people from other parts of the world to be a part of rodeo. And you know, I mean, rodeo is, I mean, like it's still iconic everywhere it's shown, you know, and when we get, do a better job of putting something that's easy to understand on the field, it's going to continue to expand. I don't see any reason for that to be not be true. I'm in a time when, you know, so much of the world really does look to what we're doing and saying, okay, I maybe don't agree with everything the way we're presenting it and all those kind of things, but still, even in that, it's got a, you know, it's got a deep-rooted, powerful engine in it, and the Olympics was a great example of being able to use that engine and show ourselves in a kind of a really cool way. You know, that little arena in Utah was just packed with so many of them were people from that come from other countries that just wanted some taste of rodeo, you know, and got to watch it and get to be on the. And get to hear the national anthem played at the top of the podium is, I mean, worth doing. So, you know, I love the fact that, you know, the PBRs had, I don't know if they still do. I don't think they still do it, but they had several years before they started the team rodeo deal where they had the cup challenge, or I can't remember what they
Yeah,
even called it.
it was World Cup for a number of years. They started in Australia, I believe, and then it went to Brazil. We never had one in Canada until it was the Global Cup back in 2017. But yeah, they have had a team event for a long time, and now that they have a whole team's formatted season, the Global Cup hasn't been a thing. But I'm a fan of it too. I think it's wonderful.
I think there's something about that that is simpler to the fan that's and it you know, so what happens is you become a JB Mooney fan if you watch the PBR or as an example. But something like that actually lets you be more than just that. It lets you cheer for not just him, but everybody that's on his team. It's the effect of all other professional sports. I mean, because they have the team aspect, when the teams play, I mean, as an example, when the Kansas City Chiefs play, they don't talk about the Chiefs playing. They talk about Patrick Mahomes playing against, you know, whoever the guy is that's the most
Brock
important
Purdy,
one. Yeah, the Brock Purdy versus Patrick Mahomes, even though
George
neither of those
Kittle.
two guys are on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
And the effect of that does two things. Number one is it elevates the cowboy on a level, because if you one elevates that, high water raises all the ships, you know, and so by and then the second thing it does is by making that a team, all of a sudden, if I become a fan of Patrick Mahomes, and all of a sudden I become a fan of Jason Kelce, and I become a fan of Chris Jones, and I become, you know, and it expands my understanding, expands. So team is a, you know, I'm so excited to hear that this new team thing is going to happen with Kid Rock, and I love the idea of that. I don't know how they're going to do it. I have a plan. I hope they have a plan that is simple. I know that if it's simple, it will have the power to engage people in a way that takes rodeo to the next level. And the Olympics was an example of that. More people were excited about it. More people were watching events after themselves because of the team aspect of
And you guys beat us, so congratulations. But
it.
how do you do a rodeo competition at this point with besides just Canada and the US? Like, I don't know. You could
Well,
bring an Australian team in at some point.
Well, so here's the way I would do it is I would back it down to the cities. There's a season of the year that's not incredibly busy. So here's what happens. I hate to say this because it's a terrible thing to say about our sport, but we have chosen the circus model of marketing, of putting our sport forward. We're the Wild West show that comes to town. Now, there's nothing technically wrong with that other than this. People only go to the circus once a year. And then they only go back next year if there's something about the circus that all of a sudden was more exciting than the year before. If we're going to translate these casual, watch it one time a year fans into something more than that, they have to have a reason to want to come back. And team is the aspect of that. So we go to towns like Fort Worth. We go to towns like Calgary. We go to towns like Cheyenne. We go to towns like Denver, Colorado, and we put on something that people love, that they pack the crowds. We go to places in the Southeast that where we haven't even been very often. Jackson, Mississippi will be packed every go around. You know what I'm saying? There are places where we go in California that, I mean, absolutely flood the stands to show up to those events. But we leave and then we don't come back to next year. We lose all the momentum, all the power, all the passion that was there. You know, we go to Salt Lake City and they absolutely love it. And then we come back next year. And so we have to regenerate that power. We have to reconnect with those fans. We have to re-engage with them. And then we bring them a product that probably won't be the same as the one they saw and loved the year before. Might be good, but there's nobody there that they go, oh, was that guy here last year? Did I cheer for him last year? Was he my guy? You know what I'm saying? It's hard for them to connect in that way. So what if we could come into those towns and we took a smaller group, took two bareback riders, two saddle bronc riders, two bull riders, two calf ropers, two team ropers, two barrel racers, two breakaway ropers, and we competed head to head against another city. You know what I'm saying? And we brought that city in there and we competed head to head. I knew who I'm cheering for. I'm in my hometown. You know, and I might cheer for that guy. I may cheer for the opposite team because I know that guy is the only guy I know. And he's the only guy they're marketing. You know, they're saying that, you know, they're saying that a Wright brother is coming into town on this team and he's going against, you know, whoever it is that's the tough Cooper for this team, you know, and even though those guys won't be competing head to head, it's still that building of rivalry that causes people to go from being casual fans to being deeper embedded in the sport. And then secondly, we make it in a way that by doing that, you're able to do things that are really hard to do right now in rodeo. It's really hard even at the national finals to come up with 15 barrelback horses that are equal or fairly equal. It's really hard to come up with 15 steers, but it's not that hard to come up with two that are equal. And so you go head to head and it's simple. Like, I feel like that was a better ride than that one. I don't have to remember the ride that happened 10 minutes ago and decide whether it was better. That one versus that one. That was better. It got the point. This one didn't. You know what I'm saying? Calf roping. We've even seen calf ropings with the lights like they have at the drag races, you know, red, yellow, green, and they go at the same time. The breakaway ropers go at the same time, and you can see the guy that throws his hand up first or the breakaway, the rope that pops off first is the winner. The other guy's the loser. You know what I'm saying? It's easy for me to understand. Steer wrestling and barrel racing, they happen one right before the other. You can tell which one's faster, which one's not, and my team's winning or my team's losing, you know, and all of a sudden you build something that is easy to understand. It happens quick. You can connect with them. All of a sudden you have a season of that. There's a time within rodeo itself, just the same way they're doing it in the bull ride. The truth of it is, I feel like the bull riders aren't exactly getting it right either. They're still a little bit confusing on how to understand that team concept and who's winning and how's my team doing, you know? They're doing some really cool stuff in social media to engage with people, the fans outside of the way for that team. And I think that's something that rodeo could do. But if team rodeo ever caught on in rodeo, it might just be a small portion of the season, but it would be the engine that turned casual fans into long time locked in, completely rabid fans.
So I think, and I haven't had this conversation the same way we're having it today. And I like that you're thinking of these outside the box ideas, but I'm wondering how, with the current structure of the PRCA, that even happens. It's probably not a PRCA endeavor because we have Cheyenne has their own rodeo committee. Fort Worth has their own committee. It's also fractured. And like what one, there was somebody that explained something to me one time where McDonald's, you know, you're going to have a Big Mac in Atlanta. That's going to be the same as one in Seattle, the same as one in Denver and Dallas and Chicago. Where rodeo, you can go to the rodeos anywhere in the world, and there's no two that are the same.
And so all of those things probably means that it's probably now that doesn't mean it won't end up being a part of the PRC. It could be built outside of that, and then they co-opt it and bring it in, or it could be something that just happens completely separate. I mean, you know, there's a lot of new events now, everything from the things that lead up to the American, to the American itself, to the WCRA and some of the events that they're having. There's a possibility to do this outside of the traditional plan of the PRCA. But the question is, will somebody, I mean, this thing that Kid Rock and them are doing is interesting. I'm excited to see if it happens. Excuse me. But if something like that were to take off, I mean, my personal opinion is it would revolutionize rodeo. So I'll go back, and there was a time. So in the 80s, there was a time, actually late 70s is when this was. There was a brief period of time where this was tried. And I got to experience just a little bit of it. They had the team called the Tulsa Twisters and a team called the Denver Stars, and they were the two best teams. And it happened like, I think it was like 2 or 3 years it lasted. But I got to be at those events. I got to, and literally I was at the, we were at Denver at the Coliseum, same place that the rodeos at had, and it's full, completely packed. And, you know, right there at the National Western, and, Tulsa's behind, and we're coming back. And the way it worked was, there was three guys in each event, and, they went twice. And, if you win against your guy, if you won, you were faster or more points, you got 2 points for your team. If the other one got a clean run or a completed ride, you know, covered them, didn't miss them out, they got 1 point. And then in the second half, the team that was in the lead, also, if you got the bonus point, was 3 points. So you could actually, in the second round, you could catch up. If you're, you know, the second half, you could catch up. The performances lasted about 2.5 hours. Anyway, it's coming along there. We're behind. Tulsa's behind. My dad's on the Tulsa Twisters. We're behind. I'm a little kid. I'm about, you know, 9 years old. I'm watching this, and I'm in the stands cheering for my team. Bobby Del Vecchio is in the bull riding. He's the last event. Well, here we catch up. Their guy goes, we are down 4 points. Okay. So if their guy rides, it doesn't matter. We can't win. Their guy rides, or their guy bucks off. So the crowd is now, this is their second year in this. They've had a full season, 2 seasons behind this. They understand that if Bobby Del Vecchio rides this bull and gets the most points, which would be 5 total points, we come from behind and win. Okay. And so Bobby Del Vecchio, this bull, the crowd is just booing and everything and trying just like somebody shooting a free throw, trying to get in his head. Okay. He comes and this one cracks it. I mean, just gets it on right there. And Bobby rides him in his flashy clothes and everything else, rides him to the whistle. He hits the ground. When he hits the ground, the crowd is deadly silent, like silent. They know what's happening. Here comes the scores. It's an 88, and it moves into the lead for the bonus. So he gets the 5 points. Beers start coming out of the top rows. I mean, like just rabid fans. I mean, I'm a little kid, and my mom was like going, hey, baby, we need to kind of sneak out. We got a Tulsa Twister gear on. You know what I'm saying? Like,
holy smokes.
And you don't experience that. Like, literally, we would go to those Tulsa Twister rodeos, and when the lights would go on, the calf rope would go red, the crowd would stand up. The entire crowd would stand up before the run and would cheer until the guy threw his hand up. And if our guy won, they were super excited. So,
jeez.
It's an example that I've seen it, so I know it'll work. You know what I'm saying?
Who put those on, and why did they quit happening? What happened?
So what happened was there was the guy. So two things. One was about nearly all of the teams at the beginning. There's I think six teams. There was a San Antonio team, a a Kansas City team, a Tulsa team, a Denver team, and a Phoenix team. I can't remember. And Las Vegas, I think it was. But most of the money behind that was all oil and gas money. Well, if you remember, the oil and gas cratered in 79 or 80. And so they lost all of their funding, you know, is mostly what happened. And then the second thing was that kind of hurt them was the PRCA at the time still had in effect their rule that you couldn't rodeo professionally and do anything else outside of the PRCA. And so they were not able to get the very, very best. Although guys like, I mean, Jake Barnes, before he became Jake Barnes of the PRCA, was a part of it. You know, there's a lot, you know, Bobby Del Vecchio, before he came in the PRCA, was a part of that. There's, you know, a lot of guys that made the NFR and did really good later were, you know, my dad was a world champion, but he was a part of that before he and matter of fact, so that ended in 79 and then he won the world in 1980, you know, so.
So okay. I think that I love the team idea. It's got to come from somewhere else. Maybe it's a PBR piece with the Kid Rock thing. One of the crazy things with their rodeo is since it's at the PBR World Finals at AT&T, there's no bull riding, which is interesting. But it'll be different because there'll be bull riding the next 2 days there. But I'm interested to see that that event and see how it goes. And I'm all for rodeo, and I like what the WCRA guys are doing. They are a big part of creating what that rodeo is going to be like as far as the competition side of it. I was hanging with Casey Duggan just before the deal in Fort Worth, and he was going through ground rules and figuring out partners and declarations and like so many different things. There's a lot of logistics to figure out a one-day rodeo and how it's all going to work with teams, right? Something that hasn't been done a bunch, but I hope that rodeo as a whole can continue can move forward, because I think it's been pretty stagnant for quite a long time. Mm. I think there's a bit of a false advertise like false thing on some of the Cowboy Channel stuff. Like I think it's still way too endemic. It's this crowd, you know, like it's great for this crowd, but there's nobody outside of this crowd that's watching the Cowboy Channel, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but
well, and it is my only kind of negative thing is that I feel like all we ever do is fight for a bigger piece of the pie instead of realizing that there is such a bigger pie out there if we would go reach for it.
Absolutely. So I'm thankful for what the PBR has done to go and do different things and reach out and try different stuff. And yeah. I don't think they really have the right formula yet with the team series. I think it's very close. And I think the entire season could move to a team's format at some point. I think they've really devalued the world title race that's on currently. They've also really devalued the bulls in the team series. I don't hear anything about the bull side of things during the team series. So, and I think that's okay because there's been way too much investment on the bull side to where the bulls got way better than the guys. And there was this kind of like piece where the bull riding talent was here, but the bulls are going here, and it outweighed it a little bit. But now there's a lot more investment on the team side with the riders. So, you know, I like it any either way, but I got to go into some other stuff here before we get wrapped up, because I forgot about well, there's two things. Well, I guess three, if we go this way, but Texas Rodeo Cowboy Hall of Fame in 2009, you were inducted the same year as Tommy Lee Jones. Tell me he showed up and you guys are buddies now or something.
Well, we're not buddies, but it was really great to meet those guys, and they're so down to earth and such great. And, you know, he was awesome. He was just such a salt of the earth kind of guy, you know, like, and one of the coolest things he said, which I think this is kind of cool. You know, he's won Oscars and Emmys and all kind of other things, you know, and he said that of all of the awards that he's ever won, he felt like that his induction into the Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame was the one that was because of who he was, not because of somebody that he played and portrayed.
Oh, that's cool. So which he's legit.
That's pretty cool, you know.
Wow. Okay, and then there was a piece about Full Metal Jousting on the History Channel. I forgot about this jousting thing. That was quite the deal for a few years, though.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was you know, such a crazy experience, and get to do that. You know, the only reason so the way that came about was my wife and I were driving to Gallup, New Mexico, to the National Junior High Finals. My son had qualified out there, and we were headed to Gallup, and she gets an email on her computer about you know, do you know somebody that's a horseman and is, you know, fearless and not afraid to take some pain and all that, you know? I said, sign him up for this deal called Full Metal Jousting, which she did. She was just joking around. She sent him an email. Here's somebody that'd be perfect for it. Well, then they turn around and call me back. And then they asked me to send them some more stuff. And they sent them a video. And then they bought me a plane ticket to go to LA and do this interview. And by that time I'm like going, okay, now what am I signed up for? And so anyway, we go on the show and it was a lot of fun, a lot of great guys. I got to know those guys and got to do something that was completely outside of my comfort zone, something I'd never done before and got to experience. And it was really is. I'm asked all the time, did you really get hit hard? Yes, you really get hit hard. I mean, when you hit them, it is, we would say if you hit, so what happened is when you hit, if you're perfectly, it's a solid wood lance. It's not like you see at the fake jousting at the, you know, medieval times or whatever. It's solid wood, inch and a half solid wood lance. And if you hit and that lance is perfectly straight and you got it couch dried and you're sitting there, right? I mean, we would say if you get hit like that, it was getting hit like God punched. I mean, it's like, bam, you know, like you just stop. I mean, that's all you go. And so anyway, it was fun to be a part of. My jousting career is now over those. I'll tell you about my last time. So I hadn't done it in a long time. And there was a fundraiser. The guys that put on the show were doing a big fundraiser for some therapeutic riding centers. This is, I think this is, this is me at the one of the events. I think this might be, is this
I think so. I figured I would see what was going on here.
Yeah, no, this is not actually one of the events I was at, but this is what they do. This is the full contact jousting. So, like you say, when you hit perfectly, like he that was a miss. So they didn't get any points, but, if you hit the gridded grand guard, you drop them like a rock. So,
So did you, what was your worst wreck in one of those? Like, did you get,
so I was going to tell you that I was going to tell you that last piece. So the last time I went was at this fundraiser for, this therapeutic riding center for, you know, people with PTSD and stuff. And, people from the military during the Afghanistan war and stuff. So we went up there and we did it. I hadn't done it in a while. And the first day I did okay, but it didn't do great. Well, the second day I kind of got my deal back. And the guy that won the show, I matched him in the first round. And I beat him. And then I came back to the guy in the championship round. I had to go against the guy that won second in the show. And our very first pass of the final for the championship came down. We go and we both hit perfect. I mean, just exactly perfect. Mine hit him just perfectly square. His hit me perfectly square and it just dropped us. And I come back and I tried to hold as long as I can. You just squeeze with your legs. The only thing you can do, you know, when you're in that place. And so I'm squeezing, trying to pull myself up, you know, on this full back up curl and I can't do it. And so I land on my shoulder with, you know, 120 pounds of gear on. So I dislocated my shoulder and I knew as soon as I hit the ground, it was dislocated. Ugh. And so the guy walks up, you know, you have an assistant on each end and he walks over there to me and I look up at him. I said, man, you got to help me up off the ground. My shoulder's dislocated. He says, now wait, he says, if you can get up, you win. I said, what do you mean? He says, he's knocked out. If you stand up, you're the champ.
Holy smokes.
So I have to stand up with my shoulder dislocated. And I wave to the crowd and I'm the champ. And then I have to go get my armor off enough so I can get my arm just back in socket. And anyway, that was my final one. I'm like, okay, I'm done.
And that was for charity. Like you didn't even win anything.
No, that was just for charity. We were just,
My gosh.
Actually, I'll tell you one last story. So when we were, this one was for money. They had 10,000. It was when the show was about ready to air. They did it at the Wisconsin Horse Fair. So they had the top eight guys from the show. They brought us in there. We did 2 days of competitions. And so I won the first day. I come back the second day. And the very first round in the second day, Joe, one of the guys from the show, he hits me right in the head, right in my helmet. And so the face mask comes up against me. I don't know if you can see it on here, but split my chin open. Well, one of the rules in jousting is if you have to leave this the list, you lose. It's just the way it is. You know, you got to be able to finish. So I had to finish that one and had three more matches after that with my chin split wide open. Okay, you see, kind of like, and just blood. And so this looked total medieval. So it's just bled down the front of my armor the whole time, you know. Oh, and I ended up winning that one, won the 10,000 at it. But then by the time it gets over and we get done signing autographs and getting awards and the big check and all that kind of stuff, it's getting late and I got to fly out at like 5 o'clock the next morning to go back home. So I get the vet and I say, hey man, is there any way you could sew my chin up? And so I talk him into it. He's like going, you know, I could get in trouble for that. I'm like, I'll never tell what your name is. I'll never tell anything like that. So he goes to the motel room, swabs me down with iodine and sews my chin up in the hotel room at the hotel I was staying at, and I flew out the next morning with vet shit. Stitches in my chins.
Holy smokes, that's unbelievable! And like, not for a lot of money. Like, you made way more rodeo.
Oh yeah, that. Yeah. It was just 10,000, but it was for the show. It was for, you know what I'm saying. It was just you know.
Holy smokes! So, what's your favorite memory of the rodeo and like rodeo business? What does it come down to?
Well, really, my favorite memories are just about so two different things in that. If you ask me about, you know, steer wrestling itself, those memories, it's weird about those. There's the runs I remember the most and are most kind of sharp to mind are always the ones where I maxed out a really bad one. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't the ones where I was super fast or whatever. I mean, those are kind of cool, but. The really cool ones is the time I won fifth on some steer that nobody could throw down. You know what I mean? That last run at the NFR is kind of memorable. I mean, like, you know, say they'd been, you know, 5'8" was the fastest they'd thrown him in. I was, you know, I won the round on him, you know? So those are kind of cool memories, but really more than that, it's about the people. I mean, rodeo is so many great guys, so many awesome moments and funny moments. And I got to travel with Luke some. He was great. Vince Walker's still my best friends. I mean, got to travel with my dad and compete with him at the national finals, which is just crazy that, you know, got to be able to do that and just got to be a part of that. And now I get to do the same with my kids. I get to watch them compete and get to watch them go at it and just experience, you know, kind of through them and see them just going after the things that are in their heart to do and just get to be a fly on the wall and get to watch that. That's such a great part of what we do in our sport. And it's just a blessing of what we get to do every day.
So for those wondering, maybe looking at one of the clinics or the summer camps, they can find all the info. It's skyranch.org. That's the info for Sky Ranch, and then ropemyers.com. The other one for, you know, directly with the different things you got on the go as well. So anything else I missed there on the side of it?
That's great. And we it's probably the other thing that I love the most about what I get to do is I've gotten to watch so many of these kids start out, you know, from even our summer camps, get to watch these little knot-headed kids grow up and become amazing young women and men that just that love horses, but love God and serve and do some really cool things. And I get to see these kids come to our clinics and, you know, they're scared to death the first time and they just have all kinds of trouble. And then they go on, they win state titles and they get to go to college that they wouldn't have got to go to. And they get to compete at that level. And some of them have gone on to compete at the professional level and win titles and win championships and go after their dreams. And that's such a blessing and such a cool thing that I get to be a part of.
Okay, and I got to ask the golf thing. Is it a hobby or is it a competition thing for you too at times? Where are you at with the golf?
Well, it's really kind of gone away. When we were rodeoing, we golfed a lot, you know, and I wouldn't say that I was great at it at all, but I did enjoy it a lot. And I love the mental piece of it, you know, since I've gotten so busy with my kids, I haven't been able to do it. And it's just kind of like rodeo too. I could still do it, but I can't do it as good as I'd like to be able to do it. So I don't want to do it.
Well, did I read something about you coming back for the American at one point too? Did you come back and get an invite of some sort for that?
I did. We had it was actually against another Canadian, Lee Graves, and I were having a match and then the winner got to go be a part of it. And that was a bummer. I was really excited about that. I was working my butt off. I was in super good shape. I mean, I was actually weighed less than I did when I was rodeoing. I mean, I was in shape. I was fit like nobody's business. And I run a steer, and he stepped on my ankle or on my knee, and I tore my PCL. And so then I was hobbled, and I was trying to compete and get ready. And but I couldn't quit, you know, I couldn't bail. And so I was trying to run him with one leg bad, and it was just, it sucked. I was like, I was so wanted to do that. You know, it was like, I was kind of a bummer, but anyway, there it was.
Is there any way around bulldoggers not hurting their knees?
Well, you know, I mean, if you do it right, it's when things go right, it's not hard on your knees. It's just that sometimes things don't go right. You know?
Yeah.
You know,
and sometimes it's the ground or the grass in Pendleton, or like the grass in Pendleton. I'm not trying to call it out here, but it's one of the worst on knees. Is it not?
Well, it's knees, ankles. Yeah. All of it.
Yeah. There's no give to it though. Not enough give.
Yeah,
to
it's it. Just, yeah. And there's people don't realize it's all these little horse divots out there that make it so bad. You know, they just kind of catch your feet and catch your ankles and stuff.
But it's kind of like jousting. There's a little bit of cowboy. Some extra.
So one of the guys
stuff
from the coaches on the jousting show, somebody asked him early, and this pertains to rodeo, bull riding, pertains to all steer wrestling. He said, they asked him, he said, are injuries common in jousting? He says, no, injuries are actually pretty rare. And he says, now breaks, contusions, strains, tears, those things are pretty common, but injuries are actually very rare.
Oh man. Well, speaking of that, I never got your definition yet. What's your definition of cowboy shit rope?
There you go. So first of all, I'd say that if you're really going to say it's cowboy, it's got to be horse, and it's got to be authentic. It's got to be real. If you ain't doing it, it ain't really you. Then it ain't cowboy shit. So.
Oh, is there anything else I missed here, rope, or anything that we should put in the show before we're done?
No, man, I think you've hit it well. You covered it pretty well. I hope I did you right.
Oh, absolutely. This was a lot of fun. Once again, thanks everybody for listening. Rope Myers here on the show today. You can check out Sky Ranch at skyranch.org or ropemyers.com. Thanks again, Rope.
Thank you.
And then you know it's time to go. But it's far too late.
Well, thanks to Rope Myers for making it work this week on the show, taking the time. Had a fun visit with Rope, but Dustin, we got what? This is the last show in March. It feels like spring is like maybe upon us before we get up another big bunch of snow here in Calgary. Your Roughneck season, you guys lost a close one on St. Patrick's Eve's Eve, 2 days before St. Patrick's Day, but that's still one of your guys' biggest games of the year, though. Attendance wise, like that was, you said almost 15,000 people. Like you guys had a big crowd.
Yeah. Saddle Dome was always packed for that. Lots of green beer and always a big one. But yeah, we lost 7-6. It was like in lacrosse, it's super low scoring. Goalies played amazing. So yeah, tough one. But we got three more home games left. So coming down to the final stretch, two games in April. April 20th is our last game of the year. We're playing the team that plays out of Fort Worth.
Panther City.
That's going to be our rodeo game night. So we might have to have a little fun maybe with the pod there and do something with our rodeo night.
Well, unfortunately, I'll be in Dawson Creek that night.
That's true. That's true. But, in advance.
Oh, in advance. Okay, yeah. But maybe that should have been the green night. 420, man. April 20th? Interesting. But you got the call from the golf course too. I forgot about that. Maybe Dustin might be joining the Valley Ridge here this year too.
We're working on it. Could be part of the crew. So yeah,
that could be a lot of fun too. But what else do we have, Dustin? We had we were just talking about this, and now I blanked out. Oh, new stuff on the website. We got some new cowboy shit on the cowboy shit website. Make sure you check it out, cowboyshit.ca. Also in stores now. We got a bunch of new designs, and we got the ad breakaway campaign. Make sure if you want to help out the breakaway ropers and the scholarship, the partnership we're doing with Brad Wall as well. That is in stores now and on the website too. And then the first bit of April, we got more new stuff coming. We're really hitting you with the new designs here right now. So got a bunch of new caps on the way, some brand new designs, a lot of fun stuff. We got a rodeo van design. That one's pretty sweet. We've got one that's called Die Standing Up. That's a cool one that I think is going to be a big hit. What else? We got one from the Yasso range, a piece of writing that Storm really likes that we were working on some clothes to go with that too. So yeah, lots of fun stuff. Check out the website. Make sure to stay tuned. And we got two shows in the bank already. We got next up on the show, it's going to be the April 3rd podcast. That's episode 9 of season number 7 here with Farrier Lee Olson. That's coming up April 3rd. And then coming up on the 17th, we've got Nolene Hoffman, singer-songwriter. She's actually touring with Charlie Crockett in May up here in Canada. And I think she's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, she's really good. And it was the first time we've had live in-studio
music
show
on the pod. Yeah,
music on the pod, so it'll be super cool.
Yeah, that one I'm really excited about. We're sitting on it now. We recorded it already, what, a week or two ago now?
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get that one out there. She was featured, for those who might not know her name yet, though, on Zach Bryan's Belting Bronco session, episode number 7, I think, of the Belting Bronco. So super cool, though. Alberta country music singer, getting a big break doing the tour with Charlie Crockett, and going to be a guest of the show April 17th. And then we're recording the next few after that and keeping it rolling throughout the summer.
Yeah. Going to be a fun spring and summer on the show. And looking forward to doing some cool different things.
What's your next rodeo, Dustin? Where are you going next? Going to be on the books yet?
Going to be doing some stuff at Aggie Days with Stampede, helping out there for the rodeo. And then, going back to one of my old favorites right by my house, my old
Bymore.
House, I guess. Bymore.
Oh, yeah.
So, always one of the early bull ridings of the year. And then, so that'll be the first 2 weeks in April with a couple of cross games sprinkled in there. So it'll be a busy, busy month.
Oh, jackpot. Yeah. I'm off till Dawson. So I got a little break.
Yeah. You're going to head back down south?
Yeah, we're going on Tuesday. So by the time we're releasing the show, we're going to be in Phoenix again. I got to go get my truck. Been down there. We left it down there, which was probably a questionable idea, but and then that snow's gonna hit, so we're gonna be driving right back through probably the snow on the way home. But get a couple more get a little more golf in and enjoy the warm weather while it's snowing here. I luckily booked that quite well timing wise on the flight to leave exactly when the snow hits again. So
perfect.
See you in a little while, Winter.
Yep.
Anyways, thanks, Dustin. Thanks to our editor, Sean Morton, for always keeping us sounding great on the show. And thanks, Dustin.
See you next time.
See you next time, folks.
Lived a lot of life, and my biggest mistake is leaving my town with a pretty lady. Shredding my heart like a day old paper. Ran me wild and drove me crazy. No vibrations, familiar faces. I leave word of all the goddamn places.